The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition, where we take one fairly narrow topic and drill a little deeper than normal. At least normal in the sense that it is a little deeper on a single topic than our Q&A show, where we do our best to get through as many questions sent in by listeners as possible. Last show, I think we got in through a record six or seven of those questions. But today we're going to deal with one particular topic, and that is, what options do you have and what can you do with your 401k after leaving your employer? And I think we have maybe a top six list or something of that, about that quantity. A lot of people think there's only a couple. There's several things you can do with it. So thanks again for joining us on the Retirement and IRA Show. And I'm here with Jim Saulnier. My name's Chris Stein. And assuming that his iPad is working, his notes on the top six things you can do with your 401k when you leave your employer, he will share with us, correct?
I will do that. It's not really, I mean, there are six options you have. I guess.
Then it'd be the top six.
But it's not necessarily that we're going to look at the top six, or in my opinion, the only six options you have with your plan, things you can do with it. We're really going to start to drill down, should you? What are the elements you're going to look for to either leave the money in the plan or to move it to your IRA, or any of the other six options that we're going to discuss? How do you come up with the decision of what suits you? It's not just, here are the six things you can do with your 401k. I also want to chat with our listeners. How do you decide what's the best option for you? That's what we really want to look at.
So it's not just roll a six-sided die? And
you could.
That's a... You should put more thought into it, is maybe what you're proposing.
I would, unless you're really short on time.
Well, it'd make this show very short.
Roll
get
the
out
dice.
A die. You've got one through six. Number the choices and roll.
Roll the dice. Yeah, we're going to go a little deeper than roll the dice. But if you stop and think about it, folks, there really are six things you can do with your 401k when you leave your employer. But what you should do may be different than what someone else does, or what some person might have written about on a blog, or in one of the financial magazines you may read. You really have to apply it to what works best for you. Okay, so the six things you can do about it, and if you stop and think about it, folks, they really kind of make sense. Obviously, you can leave it there in the plan. Mm-hmm. That's your first option. Or you can move it to a new 401k, assuming you didn't retire and you're just changing jobs. You can move it to your own IRA. You can just take the money out and spend it. That's called the lump sum option. You can convert it to a Roth IRA. Or if the plan allows, you can leave it at the plan and convert it to a Roth, a 401k at the plan. Can you think of any other things you could do with the 401k?
Well, let me first say, we're assuming that your 401k is of sufficient size, that they're not forcing you
out. I was going to mention that. Yeah, we're going to.
So when you say you could leave it there, most people can. And most people listening here could do that. But if you have a very small balance, you only work there for a short period of time, they don't want to, plan administrators didn't want to mess with a bunch of little balances, because there's costs involved with each account that they have at the 401k. So the rule, the law, is that they can boot you out. And isn't the number, is it $5,000?
Less than $5,000, yeah, they move you to an IRA. They're not just going to send you a check, here's $5,000. They will move it to an IRA. Now, of course, you didn't open the IRA, so they're going to base everything off the information they have on you. I wouldn't rely on that, and there's no beneficiary designation on that IRA because they can't decide who's going to get the money. You also, if you have less than $500, you will get a check. They won't even open an IRA. They're just going to give you the $500. You have to declare it as income, and they'll send the mandatory 20% withholding to the feds and move on from there. More than $5,000, they can't touch the money.
Then you have these six choices. Then you've got, that's when you have total choice. But below that, I just want to point that out because obviously most, 90% of people, or probably 99% of people listening, have got more than $5,000 in their retirement account, if they have one. Some people just don't have one at all. But if you have one, you're likely of the age where you've been contributing for a while, you're exceeding the $5,000. So you do have the choice of number one, leave it there.
So again, the six items, you can leave it there, except for the nuances that Chris just spoke about. Move it to your new employer's plan, assuming you didn't retire and you actually have a new employer with a 401k that will accept transfers in. You can move it to your own IRA. You take the money out and spend it. You can convert it to a Roth IRA, or you can convert it to a Roth 401k if the employer plan allows.
I'm not sure I can think of another choice other than the six.
I can't. I think those are the only six.
I think that's about,
I mean, there's sub things you can do with those,
right,
but those are the six main.
Yeah, there's differences in how you might do each of these six or
now, one
nuances,
gotcha that I want to give, and we're going to get into this on another show when we cover net unrealized appreciation, which would be a real specialized EDU show. This one is more of a generalized EDU show that applies to many, many of our listeners, whereas net unrealized appreciation, NUA for short, is only going to apply to a narrow subset of our listeners. I know it applies to many because they've reached out to us, but here's a gotcha, though. Remember on net unrealized appreciation, and I know, listeners, I'm going down a rabbit hole, but bear with me for 1 minute. If anyone listening has net unrealized appreciation, Chris and I are not going to explain what that is on this podcast, but I want to make mention of it because of the in-plan Roth 401k conversions. If you convert your 401k to a Roth 401k, that is a triggered event. So if you separate from service, that is a triggering event for NUA. Age 59 and a half is a triggering event, and death is a triggering event. Those are the main triggering events. Disability is only a triggering event if you're self-employed. And that starts getting into a private 401k with stock in it, and it's going to apply to hardly anyone listening to this show.
Yeah.
So it's death, age 59 and a half, or separation from service. Remember, we had a question recently from a CPA whose client separated from service younger than 59 and a half. And the CPA wanted to separate out the non-NUA assets, Chris, inside the gentleman's 401k, and he wanted to leave the employer stock, but he didn't want to exercise the actual NUA and declare it as income until several years later. And he was wondering if he would be able to do that. And I said, well, the triggering events are separation from service, age 59 and a half, and death. This guy was retiring younger than 55, so that would be the separation from service, Chris, on the NUA, the first triggering event, mm-hmm. separation from service. So if the NUA is not completed within that year, and it's a calendar year, of the first trigger, which would be separation of service and the movement of the non-NUA money, I said he had to wait till at least age 59 and a half. and that would give them another triggering event. But conversions can screw that up. Because you would think, Chris, the money's not leaving the 401k. If you actually look at your 401k statement, you'll get one statement. It'll show Roth money. It'll show 401k money. It'll show after-tax voluntary contributions all on one statement. And you kind of think, okay, this is just one 401k. So why would the conversion of a traditional 401k to a Roth 401k be part of the lump sum distribution rules? Under NUA, you have to distribute the entire 401k within one calendar year of the first distribution in that triggering period. The IRS has ruled several times and won in court, and Ed Slott reviewed this with us at our latest class. The conversion of a traditional 401k to a Roth 401k triggers the calendar year lump sum distribution. So in the case of that CPA, if the year his client retires prior to 55, moves the non-NUA money but leaves the NUA in the 401k, then at 59 and a half, he hits another triggering event. You can wait to exercise the NUA anytime you want. The triggering event just cocks the trigger. It doesn't pull the trigger. Or to borrow from a revolver, it cocks the hammer. It doesn't pull the trigger. So the first hammer cock was the separation from service. The trigger got pulled when he moved the non-NUA money. The second cocking of the hammer on the revolver was age 59 and a half. But now let's just pretend the CPA thinks, you know what? We need to wait to 62. It's a better tax period for you for one reason or another. But why don't you go ahead and convert at the 401k? Just start converting some of that. What if the person who owns it wants to get it into a Roth because the stock is growing really good? I don't know. I'm just coming up with all these reasons. And they start to convert, that pulled the trigger. And you would think it didn't, because you never took money out of the 401k. You just changed its tax status from traditional to Roth. That blows NUA.
It's a good thing to keep in mind.
That was one of those gotchas. Told you I got a couple of gotchas at the last Ed Slott meeting. That was one of them. Okay, anyways, I wanted to make mention of that. So the six options that you can do with your 401k, you need to decide what you want to do. And I think the first thing you need to figure out, let's just say if you want to move it to your own IRA, I guess is what you should first look at. Please understand, listeners, not all monies can be rolled over. So if you're going to move it to your own IRA, keep in mind a few, and these are they're not quite common, but you have to recognize in the year you retire, we talked about this on our latest, I think, Q&A show, Chris. No, our latest EDU show, a couple of EDU shows ago. Your required minimum distribution, if you separated from service after age 70 and a half, you cannot roll over your RMD. Let's just keep that out there as well. It's another little gotcha.
You got to take that out that year before you decide to roll over.
Correct.
The rest.
Correct.
Yeah. So you can get the rest of it out of there. So if your intent is to do that, you just want to make sure to do things in the right order so you don't blow things.
Okay, so those cannot be rolled over. Also, deemed distributions. This is the other one that people will get nailed by. Ed listed about 9. Most of the other 7 are very rare. I'm not even going to mention. Deemed distributions can happen all the time. A deemed distribution, folks, is when you separate from service. When you separate from service after, with an outstanding loan on your 401k. the deemed distribution is essentially the default on that loan if you don't pay it off by the deadline. Now, the deadline has been greatly extended under the Trump tax cuts. Used to be 60 days after you left work. Now, it's, I believe, October 15th of the year following the year you separate from service. So you have a long time to pay that loan balance off. But if you don't, that is taxed to you as a deemed distribution. You cannot roll that deemed distribution.
Yeah, so just remember, if you still have that outstanding balance, they're going to consider anything that's left over when you leave. You can't continue making payments normally out of payroll withdrawal, which is how they generally set that up, because you have no more paycheck. So they're going to assume that you just want to keep the money that's left over. You, instead of paying it back, that's the distribution, what he's calling a deemed distribution. But you do have a time, if you decide you don't want that to happen, to shove the money back in there real quick. Used to be have to be really quick, that 60 days. Now that's been extended. But if you leave it out, you can't roll that money over. You've got to shove it back in there before the deadline.
Now, here's one thing that many people don't know. If you did want to pay that loan off, but you also want to roll the money out of the 401k, you do not have to send the money to the 401k and then roll it out. You can roll over that money. You have 60 days from when the 401k was distributed to you. So let's say you leave with a $20,000 outstanding balance. You're not defaulting on it. You're going to make good on it. You can take that money and put it in an IRA as a 60-day rollover.
Perfect. So that'd be easier. If your intent is to get the IRA, just do that. But you only have the 60 days. You don't have till October 15th the year following. You've got to, for it to qualify as a 60-day roller.
Nope. Yes, you do not have to do it by that deadline if you're going to try to move the IRA prior to that. Yes. Yeah. So just one of those other little weird things. So I just wanted to make mention of those few little one-offs, the 401k conversion to a Roth 401k, how it could mess up NUA, deemed distributions, and the required minimum distributions. You don't want to mess up those three little things. Or they could be really big things, not little things. So what should you consider on what's best for you? How to decide what to do with the 401k? If you work with a lot of financial advisors, or should we say investment advisors masquerading as financial planners, their answer is going to be roll the money over. Now, the government, through the Department of Labor, was trying to reduce that knee-jerk reaction of move your money to an IRA with me, and I'll not me as in us personally, but this is what investment advisors were telling you. You know, move it over to me. I'm going to charge you 1% of your assets. I'm going to manage it. That rule fell through. It was called the DOL rule. That fell through. The SEC is looking for their option, which is called the best interest. I'm not quite sure what the SEC is going to come out with on rollovers. But the government is recognizing that there's a lot of nefarious players out there who are taking your money from a perfectly good 401k with very low fees and moving it, perhaps, to a product or a service with far higher fees and questionable, quote-unquote, alpha, if you will, which is the alpha is kind of a measure in investing of what the manager is doing for you above and beyond what the expected return is. It's kind of the higher the alpha, the better the manager. Right. So there's questionable value for a lot of what these investment advisors are saying they're going to do for you, and would you be better off leaving it in the 401k? The government was going to really make that difficult to move money. That has, again, fallen through, so it's still fairly easy in the sense the regulatory burden on the advisor's shoulders is still quite low on if it was in your best interest or not to move the money. So the buck stops with you. Mama government hasn't stepped in yet and passed all these rules to protect you. So you're your best form of protection. So some of the things to think of, though, on what you should do, the one that comes to mind and is the one that most investment advisors use to motivate you to move. Do you have any guess what that is? In my mind, the number one that investment advisors use to make you move your money?
You have more flexibility is usually what they say.
They'll say better investment choices.
Yeah, makes more flexibility better. What you can invest in, which implies you don't have access to the best stuff inside the 401k. They don't really say it like that, but it is true that most 401ks do not have the flexibility of a IRA, and that's intentional. It's not that they couldn't really. I mean, there are some, it would be unlikely that you, especially in an ERISA plan, that you'd have the flexibility in there because they don't want to make it too confusing for people. They're kind of, mama government, as you said, is kind of watching out for them through the ERISA rules. Where the IRA, anything you want to put in the IRA that's legally allowed, which is a huge list. There's a lot of different things you can put in there, way beyond what you could use your 401k for.
Exactly. Excuse me.
And so the advisor's using that, since it's an obvious characteristic that's different between the two, they're using that as the justification for encouraging you to roll it out into the IRA. Just so happens that now it's in a platform where they can get away with charging you fees to manage it, where they couldn't as easily do that in the 401k platform.
So you do have to look at investment options, and we're not throwing investment advisors under the bus. I am an investment advisor as well. I employ investment advisors. We have a CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst, who works for us. We have another investment personnel that works at CSU who's getting his CFA designation, Chartered Financial Analyst. These people all help us evaluate investments. We are not anti-investment. We just don't think that alone can sometimes be the reason to move your 401k. You have to really look at your 401k. And I will say, Chris, a lot of 401ks have really improved their investment options. And they have some okay choices. Granted, they're very limited. There's not much there. So don't be quick to dismiss the 401k or embrace the IRA merely because of investment options. I would want more of a reason. So there's another thing to consider. To me, the biggie, fees, cost. Because at the 401k, the internal operating costs are quite low. Now, there are some small 401ks that have very high fees, and I don't like them. They're either 401ks opened through insurance companies or through commission broker-sold mutual fund shares, and they're quite expensive. And these are a lot of small plans, less than a few million dollars of assets. Now, and I can't remember the name of it, but remember on last week's show, the acronym of the new law making its way through Congress?
Oh, yeah.
It's secure.
I remember it
the
being,
Secure
yeah,
Act.
The Secure Act.
It
yeah.
just it was the worst acronym ever from the Department of Acronyms in the U.S. government. The worst one. But the Secure Act contains a provision to allow a lot of these small plans, even though they're in unrelated businesses, to just join a bigger 401k. So you're going to, if this law passes, you will see providers who'll say, hey, here is our option. We have this benefit, this benefit, this benefit, this benefit, and a bunch of small people can come over to these 401ks. So you'll have like a master 401k and you can just join it. And that will bring down the cost,
which will be good,
of those horrendous 401ks. So it is quite possible some of our listeners have 401ks with very high fees. Remember the one listener we had, Chris, who had a 1% annual fee in his 401k?
Yeah.
And he left the money in there for some reason. There was something the backdoor Roth. He wanted to do the backdoor Roth, and
So he didn't want to fill up his IRA with money. He needed to keep it clean.
No, what he did is he had to move.
He rolled it in from the IRA.
He had to move his IRA into there, pay a 1% annual fee so he could do the back door.
Yeah.
And we had talked to him about trying to get his employer to get you a cheaper plan than that.
Right.
And he said he would approach the employer, but he didn't think the employer would move. So that was an extreme example of a very high cost 401k. But fees can really impact you when you're moving money from the 401k. Because outside of those small 401ks, listeners, that I spoke about, the average internal cost per employee of a 401k, now granted we're talking mid-size to large to uber large to super large 401ks, I agree, $58. That's the average cost the employees pay. Now, some, depending on how, if there's revenue sharing going on, sometimes you're paying a lot more than that. And then you get, what do they call it again? I always can never remember that word. I can remember everything under the sun, but the word forfeitures. They'll take forfeitures and spread that back out to help lower the cost of revenue sharing. I'm going a little deep there, folks. Just ignore me. I kind of got nerdish out there for a bit. A lot of revenue sharing is going the way of the dinosaur, and employees are just paying the fee. You know, without mentioning the employer, Chris, I'm on the retirement board of a large Northern Colorado employer where we adopted that fee structure 2 years ago, and it was $56 per employee they have to pay. So each employee is debited $56, whether you're a new employee or someone who's been on for 20 years, everybody pays the same $56, and there's no revenue sharing. So the shares of the mutual funds available in the 401k are the lowest cost shares available for that fund. So it really lowered the cost to the employees, because under the old model with revenue sharing, 40% of the funds paid no revenue sharing. 60% did. So only the employees in those 60% were picking up the cost of the entire plan. And we said that is totally unfair. So it was totally revamped, and that's how it's being done. Now, when you move to an IRA, you could have your annual account maintenance fee on a custodial IRA maybe $30-$40 right off the bat, and you're only paying $56. But the real cost of moving it to the IRA is going to be the cost of the investment advisor. And that's where you have to be careful.
Right. So usually they're trying to encourage you to get those assets out so they can provide you with regular ongoing advice, which some people would like and are willing to pay for it, happy to pay for it. And so it's not necessarily bad, but the criticism we have, and I have personally, is that these fees and what you're actually getting for this cost is pretty murky. And few advisors have the ability to point out where they are actually giving you a net benefit. In other words, the benefits or perceived benefits of what they're doing outweigh the costs that they're charging you. And most kind of stumble over themselves when you ask them that straight up to justify what people are getting for the fees.
And to overcome it, Chris, a lot of investment advisors, which I read a very poignant article many, many years ago, and I wish I saved the article. It began with the gist of the article was in a professional journal, how the vast majority of people who call themselves financial planners are not financial planners. That was the gist of the title, so it caught my eye. And what the author was pointing out, and he was 100% correct, he or she, I can't even remember who wrote it, most financial planners are nothing more than investment advisors. And he went on to say, or she went on to say, I can't remember again if it was a man or woman who wrote the article, that most of them do it quite poorly. And are you really getting what, is it really worth what you're paying? But to justify sometimes very high fees, they throw in free, quote-unquote, financial planning. And they'll say, well, we charge 1% of assets, but we're going to do a financial plan for you. Everybody knows I travel to a lot of continuing education courses. And in another month, less than a month, I'll be in Vegas, less than 30 days now. I'll be at the AICPA, the Association of International Certified, it's not public accounting, professional accountants. You figure CPA would be certified public accountants, but it's not. It's professional accountants. But the AICPA meeting, which is massive, it's huge. It's probably one of the better meetings to go to. If you're a colleague, if you're a financial planner listening to this, get your little hiney to AICPA every June in Vegas. You'll like it. But anyways, I go all around to a lot of these places with offering continuing education credits, but you have the how the costs are covered, you have presenters. And they get booths, mm-hmm. and you go in there to the booths, and you talk to the financial planning software providers. And what do you think one of the biggest selling factors they use to try to get you to use their software?
It isn't the quality of the analysis. It's how quickly it can get done. That's what they're pitching. They're saying, you can crank through one of these plans in 10.5 minutes. No, we can beat that. You can do one with our software in 9 minutes.
Chris is being a little facetious, but he's 100% correct. Usually with an hour or less. The new one when I was at Ed Slott,
yeah.
I don't want to name the person providing it, 20 minutes.
20 minutes or less. You're fine. Your retirement plan.
Financial plans in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
How good do you think those plans are, folks?
Yeah.
And if you're getting it for, first of all, if you're getting it for quote unquote free, how good is it? But the other reason I don't like asset management is not financial planning. Don't conflate the two. Don't mix them together. Why should you? And it gets rid of, Chris, charging for the complexity of the client case, which is how we charge as a firm. You can come to us with $10 million, and it could be a damn easy case compared to someone with $1.5 million with a special needs child and a disability. And we're spending hours and hours on that case, and the person with $10 million, it's fairly straightforward. Right. Now, again, extreme example, but you get the picture, people. When you're working with an advisor who is just going to charge you an investment management fee and quote-unquote roll-in financial planning, you don't have any way of really extrapolating and measuring the value you're getting for the investment management and the value you're getting for the financial planning. So how can you benchmark the investment management appropriately? And how can you really tell, am I overpaying for financial planning?
Right.
That's the issue I have with it.
And this is what you have to clarify in your mind. You have to find a way to wade through this confusion with a lot of people's pricing models. To decide if it's a good idea to roll your 401k money out to that IRA or other account that you might put it in. Don't just take the, you have a lot more flexibility, a lot more choices, so it's bottom line better. Just because you have more choices, if it's going to cost you a whole lot more and you don't get anything in return, those extra choices are worthless, in my opinion.
Exactly. You
know, being able to choose more things and end up with less money than more, give me the narrow group instead. Not to say there aren't absolutely great reasons to roll it out. And one could be that you have more choices if you're specifically looking for choices that don't exist in the 401k. So the fact that you have more choices might be legitimate. But if there's not a real true reason to need those other choices, that shouldn't be part of the driving force to move it out. It should be other things like the fee structure, which most people don't want to admit it, so they're trying to pitch this idea, but most of the time it's less expensive to leave it in the 401k. Most 401ks have such large numbers in them that there's economies of scale there, and each individual gets the management, if you will. It's not management in the form of, you know, managing the investments themselves, but managing the plan, and the overhead of the plan itself is extraordinarily low a lot of times and can unlock access to lower fee investments. Another thing we haven't, you kind of alluded to it, Jim, but there's when you try to buy shares in different types of funds, which I guess I'll have to play the mutual fund disclaimer, but when you the different mutual funds, the same mutual fund, in other words, buying the same portfolio of investments within a mutual fund, there's, I don't know, what's the most number of different share classes you've seen? 5, 6 different?
Oh, God, more than that.
More than that, yeah.
More than that. And some fund companies, it's insanity.
Right. So you have all these different share classes, and when we say classes, it really just means you can buy a share of this fund
at different prices.
At different prices.
Same fund, different prices.
Same fund, yeah. So you're buying pieces of the same portfolio, which is what a mutual fund is. You're buying a little piece or slice of that with each share that you own. And they just have all these different pricing structures. So they call them Class A, Class B, Class D, institutional shares. There's all kinds of different words for them that they use. But if you're in a big 401k, sometimes they have access to those institutional shares that you don't have access to individually through your IRA. So people might say, well, there, you know, I only pay $30 on my IRA, low fees, but you're buying into shares that have higher embedded fees than the shares that you, the same shares, or not the same shares, but the shares of the same mutual fund, or pretty much the same mutual fund sometimes. You can't always find exactly the same one, but with much, much lower institutional level fees in there because of the economies of scale that they've got going
right.
on. And the biggest gripe I've got is the lack of transparency of all of this stuff. It's even as little bit of transparency as we start to see in some of this as far as divulging these fees, they're oftentimes described and laid out in such a confusing manner that no layperson could ever possibly understand them. So it would be one thing, you know, most people are sharp enough that if they were given the information in an understandable way, they could make a rational choice for themselves. But right now, the industry has it set up so that there is this lack of transparency, makes it impossible to choose. So then it just comes down to, gee, do I like the sound of the guy who's trying to convince me to roll it out? Does he sound, you know, seem like a good guy? You know, that
well,
kind of stuff.
A couple more things on fees, because to me, this is the biggie. Couple more things on fees. If your 401k is going to the pricing model that the employer that I'm on their retirement board recently adopted 2 years ago, and I told you the average fee is just $58 per employee, and in fact, for the employer that I help represent on their retirement board, it came to $56. So it's right in that ballpark, obviously. But if your employer is going to be embracing that, don't look at it as a negative. Look at that as a positive. Because in conjunction with going to a flat pricing, you're going to get out of the high fee funds. And they have to put you in the lowest share class funds available. And that's the problem with 401ks that get paid through revenue sharing. You don't see a debit on your 401k statement. Now it's reflected to you in a lower return of the mutual fund. But how many people are going to go out there, Chris, and really look up other share classes of that fund, try to determine how much they're paying, what's this costing? The most open and clear way of doing is just charge the 401k participants. Now back to the advisor side. If you're thinking of moving your money, please remember, folks, it's not an all or nothing. If the advisor you're working with is saying, well, you got to move this money over to me and I'm going to manage it for 1% because I can get you in this phenomenal large cap growth fund. I'm just making this up. This phenomenal large cap growth fund over here that you, it blows away anything in your 401k. Oh, gee, okay, Mr. Advisor, and how much of my $1 million 401k is going to go into that fund? 10%, $100,000. Okay, here's the $100,000. We'll transfer it over. I'm going to keep the other $900,000. Now charge me the 1% on $100,000. And if the person says, well, that's not enough money to work with us in order to give you the financial plan, find a new advisor. Because your financial planning and retirement planning should not be tied to the size of your portfolio. One of our selling points that we talk about all the time here at my firm, you don't have to move money to us. We don't need to manage your assets. We offer it, and we offer it more as a convenience here, because that's what it is. It's no different than me. I do not do my own shirts, my button-downs. I take them to a laundromat that charges me $2.60. You know when I started with them, it was $1.80? Now it's up to $2.60.
Oh, that inflation.
That's inflation. I pay $2.60. They launder my shirt and press it. And it looks a hell of a lot better than I could do. Mm-hmm. But could I do it? Yes. But I got more important things I want to do with my time than sit there ironing. We view asset management as the same. If you're listening to this podcast, you're a do-it-yourselfer. You're pretty smart. You probably index a lot to ETFs or to Vanguard. We've got a lot of boggleheads over here. Vanguardians, I call them. We understand that. If we manage your assets, that's why we cap our fee. We personally don't believe in the AUM model. We're going to charge you a flat price, whether you bring $500,000 over to us or $5 million. So you don't worry that our advice is being tainted. Oh, yeah, I want you to bring more money over here. Oh, yes, you definitely want to bring it here, only so my pay goes up. Our pay doesn't rise by the size of your portfolio. You pay us a flat fee to manage your portfolio. But we have designed our business model specifically that way. If your advisor doesn't have a model like that, and he is asking you or telling you to move your million-dollar 401k to him, and, oh, I'll lower my fee from 1% to 0.6%, it's still $6,000. Are you getting $6,000 worth of help? And ask him outright, well, what investments are you going to put me in? Well, $300,000 or $100,000 or $500,000 of that million is going to be invested in these funds and you can't get them. Just move those funds and keep your management costs with that advisor low. Or ask your advisor point blank, can you come up with another pricing model? I don't really want to give you a percentage of my portfolio because it's marketed, Chris, as AUM, a percentage of your portfolio. AUM stands for assets under management, AUM. But if you actually look at what that industry standard 1% fee is, Chris, it's a pretty damn big percent of your return. Our current forward-looking 10 years and longer expected return of a 60-40 moderate portfolio, and one day we'll bring Travis or Scott on the radio to explain to clients how we come up with our forward-looking numbers, is up from 4.65 to 5%. Now, after today in the market, maybe it's back down. But it's up right now to about 5%. But if your advisor is charging you 1% of your assets, he or she is taking 20% of your return.
Yep.
That's how I want you to look at it. And I'm going to, and again, I get it. A lot of colleagues listen to this, literal colleagues who know me, and a lot of people who are in our industry haven't been in as long as us, Chris, listen to this. And I'm not looking to upset them. I'm not bashing that model. I just think it's come and gone. It's had its time. And I freely admit, as someone who's been doing this for almost 22 years, when I managed money 15, 20 years ago, Chris, it was a pain in the ass. We didn't have the technology we have today.
Right.
If I had to rebalance a portfolio or invest a portfolio or even try to determine the tax implications of sales, everything was done by hand.
Right. So a bigger portfolio meant more work.
Absolutely.
So it made sense to have it be a percentage of that. They're now trying to scratch and claw and hold on to that model because now they're efficiencies of technology have helped them, but if they can still collect these high fees, guess where that money goes?
In their pocket.
Right in their pocket.
And that leads into my favorite quote. My favorite. That's why I say, look at this magazine. It's already starting to, what do you call it when paper goes from white to this putrid brown because of the air?
Oxidizes.
Thank
I
you.
Don't know.
It's oxidizing.
Looks and a little rough.
This is Barron's. I love Barron's. So a little shout out to Barron's. I read Barron's every week. from January 2017. Do you know who John Reckenthaler is? And I probably butchered his name because I'm not a very good pronunciator.
Well, the name's really familiar. Where would I know John from?
Where would you know John? He was one of the founders of Amazon. No, not Amazon. Morningstar. Why the hell did I say
that's
Amazon?
That's right. Morningstar. Yep.
Morningstar. Mm-hmm. John found, well, he didn't find it. He got together with Don Phillips and they formed a tight. He was actually in school for Shakespeare. He was studying at the University of Chicago. He was studying Shakespeare in 1985. He met a guy named Don Phillips. Don Phillips was telling him how he's doing research on mutual funds. And Morningstar wasn't around back then. And he stopped studying Shakespeare, which probably has proven to be quite profitable for him. And he got into Morningstar. He retired in 2017 around the age of 55. So he embraced early retirement, clearly. And one of the things, Barron's interviewed him in January of 2017, and I saved this article, folks. This is one of the founding people, not the founder, but one of the founders of Morningstar. And Barron's asked them, how are investors dumber? He asked them first, how are investors smarter? And there's a couple of paragraphs of that. There's only one little section, you can see it here, I highlighted it, on how they're dumber. And here's the quote he said. Investors aren't any smarter in thinking through what they are paying. They've become very hard on fund expenses, but aren't thinking through their advisor expenses. And that will change. That's what he said. I loved that because all the advisors, all investment advisors we're talking about, not true planners like Chris and I, all the investment advisors out there, what did they do? They adopted passive ETFs and indexing, and they're telling their clients, oh, we lowered your fund fees. Let me look at your portfolio so I could see what you're paying. Oh, you're in this evil fund charging 1.2%. I could put you in this fund charging 0.2%. And clients are eating that up, Chris. Oh, thank you. But they're not paying attention to the 15, 20, 25, 30% of your return that advisor has taken. That's the issue with fees. So again, I'm not going to win any friends over. I get that in the advisory world, listening to that little tirade I gave. But no one will dispute. You know this. You teach this, for Pete's sakes, Chris. You know this is coming. There is what is known in the industry as fee compression. And people, clients, listeners are starting to pay attention. What am I getting for the 1% I'm paying you? And why can't you just invoice me separately? Why does everything have to be rolled in? What are you going to charge me for asset management? What are you going to charge me for financial planning, or in our case, retirement planning? What are you going to charge me for tax planning, estate planning, income planning? Separate them out and let me choose what I want.
That's revolutionary.
happens to be how we do it, so we're biased. Okay, now, factors to consider, and this is a biggie, especially for our doctor listeners, and we know you're out there because many of you have contacted us. Creditor protection. The creditor protection of a 401k eats the lunch on the creditor protection to an IRA, depending on the state you live in. Colorado gives IRAs really good protection. California, I wouldn't move it. California does not protect IRAs from creditors. Federal law will protect them from bankruptcy. But what if you're being sued? What if you're in a position, a job, that has legacy lawsuit risk, and you move a ERISA, Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA protects 401ks. You move it from an ERISA-protected plan to an IRA, you'll still get great bankruptcy protection, but you're not going to get creditor protection. So be very wary moving if you want creditor protection. Now, if you're not in a career that is suit happy, if you worked but you were a blue-collar or a white-collar worker but never really exposed yourself to the liability of the corporation, then creditor protection may not be important to you. But creditor protection is something you have to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Those of you who know who you are, if you're in a sue-happy industry, and that is something to absolutely consider, and you should be aware of what your state's limitations are. Might want to move your practice. I mean, that might be a little extreme, but there's quite a bit of difference from state to state on that piece.
Okay. Another one, estate planning. You have to remember, 401ks are much more restrictive when you, the owner, die on what your beneficiaries can do. Some mandate, they got to move it. Some, most, will not let a non-spouse beneficiary be beneficiary. And I told you of a major employer with a million plus 401k last year, forced the spouse to move it.
Didn't even want the spouse to stay.
Yeah. If you are doing a lot of planning, remember we got an email recently on disclaiming planning. Mm-hmm. Somebody was wondering how to do the beneficiary designations for disclaiming. Most 401ks aren't going to let you do all that.
No.
So if you're getting into trusts, disclaimers, separate accounts, which allows beneficiaries to open their own so they don't have to use the age of the oldest beneficiary. I'm getting a little deep into estate planning here. But a reason to maybe consider moving a 401k, this is why I'm saying it's not an easy decision, Chris. You might like the investments over here, but the fees could be lower over there. But the estate flexibility is better over there. You have to kind of set up that column, pros and cons.
Right.
And go through these. But you've got to look at estate planning issues. IRAs can be very flexible. However, you do have to look at the IRAs themselves because IRAs may not allow everything. And you have to find a custodian that will. Taxes are another thing to look at. Now, taxes are going to be the same. What I'm getting at here is NUA, net unrealized appreciation. That's tax planning. You have to move the 401k if you want to qualify for NUA. That's as far as I want to go. We're going to do a whole EDU show, Chris, on NUA. But taxes, also conversions, Roth conversions. Your employer may not allow or even offer a Roth option, so you have no choice but to move it
out.
And then, well, I won't put this one under taxes. I'll put it under flexibility or simplicity. What would we want to put? Because that's both in my list here. I will put it under simplicity and convenience. Well, we'll begin with that next. Simplicity and convenience. What do we mean by simplicity and convenience? Required minimum distributions. IRAs can be combined and treated as one. 401ks don't. If you have 10 IRAs and 10 401ks and you reach age 70 and a half, the person with 10 IRAs is still taking 10 RMDs, but they can take it from just one IRA.
Right. They can satisfy it from whatever combination of those IRAs, even from just one that they wish.
And we have clients who do that. Mm-hmm. This is my RMD IRA, and it's invested in a money market account. This is my long-term IRA, and it's invested in a crazy uncle hard investment. But if you have 10 401ks, Chris, how many individual RMDs do you have to take?
You have to calculate and take 10 separate ones, one from each one, and an excess from one account. You might say, oh, I took money out even before I figured out my RMD. I took extra money out of this account, so I want to count that towards this over here. Nope, doesn't work that way. Each is handled distinctly and separately.
Exactly. So for simplicity and convenience sake, it is easier when dealing with a IRA over a 401k. but also Roth conversions. That's what started to get me thinking of this. A lot of employers don't offer the ability to do Roth conversions. So it's simpler if you move to an IRA and you have to convert to an IRA. It is going to be easier if you convert at the same custodian. If you want simplicity, it's more paperwork, more things that can go wrong if you try to convert from the 401k to a Roth IRA, because you're in the investment world, it's different account types. And sometimes that messes up the custodian. I've seen custodians who don't take it because they say it's not coming from a 401. It's not coming, rather, from a Roth IRA. It's coming from a different account. Well, it's going to be a conversion. Well, we don't accept that. They want you to move it to an IRA with them. Even though you don't have to, a lot of custodians mandate that. Sometimes it's just easier, folks. If you're going to do some conversions and your employer doesn't allow it, to simply move that money to an IRA and convert with the same IRA custodian from a simplicity and convenience standpoint. So that's what I wanted to get to on that. 10% penalty issues. You do have to take that into account. Not all 10% penalties apply equally. The big one is the age 55.
Right. So this is a case a lot of times with people who are retiring before they've reached 59 and a half. They want to be able to access money in those early years. They haven't qualified for Social Security yet. Maybe they have other things that are happening, but they need money now to live upon. And maybe all their money is tied up in their retirement accounts. If that money is all in an IRA, they're going to pay a 10% penalty to get it out before age 59 and a half. But if they have separated from service or retired after they turn 55, they have access immediately to 401k money from that employer that they left and avoid the 10% penalty. They still have to pay taxes on it, so you're never going to get out of the tax situation, but there's no reason to you want to pay that extra 10% if you don't have to. So a lot of times this is a reason maybe not to leave all the money in the 401k. Remember, you can roll out partial amounts in the 401k to the IRA, but leave behind enough to fund what you want to do between 55 and 59 and a half. That's a very common option. And people still get stuck in their head. They have to either keep it all there or they have to move it all. A lot of people figure out, I'm going to need about, you know, fill in the blank, a couple $100,000 or whatever it is. I'll leave that in there, but all the rest, I want to go out to the IRA for all the reasons we've pointed out might be a good idea to move it out for simplicity and those sorts of things. But that 10% early withdrawal penalty being an exception with the age 55 rule on 401ks is justification. Here's another one. And we're kind of going back and forth. Here's a pro for moving it out. Here's a con for moving it out. Here's a pro for moving it out. That kind
well,
of
education so. Expenses come from an IRA, the 10% exemption.
Yep, there's that.
Not the 401k. Mm-hmm. So you may want to move from the 401k to the IRA to get that exemption. So the 10% penalty can move in the opposite direction as well to benefit you.
True. Mm-hmm.
But the age 55 exemption is the big one.
That's the most common.
Yeah. Yes. Another simplicity and convenience, withdrawals. I have seen 401ks, even large 401ks, not necessarily large for the client, that the client has $1 million in it, but the plan has hundreds of millions of dollars in it. And they charge you every time you call them up. I saw one, $40, Chris, for every withdrawal
every time you
took.
Want some money?
Including an RMD.
What?
Including the RMD. Had a
wow.
$40. That's
they're basically
a plan
saying,
is saying, get the hell
yeah,
out.
Yeah, they're saying, get out of here.
Right. So you have to look at withdrawal restrictions. IRAs generally have no withdrawal restrictions. You could call up the custodian on Monday, take out $1,000, call him on Tuesday, take out $100, call him on Friday, take out another $400. Mm-hmm. A lot of 401ks, if they don't charge, like this place did, $40 a withdrawal, they may limit you to one withdrawal a month, one withdrawal a quarter, three a year. You sometimes see restrictions. That's what allows them to keep their costs at $56 or $58. It's dirt cheap if they don't allow people to do a lot of this. So you have to look at restrictions. And then more flexibility in the IRA on withdrawal taxes. So many people don't think of that. 401ks must send 20% of your withdrawal to the IRS in taxes. IRAs don't have to send anything if you tell them not to. If you don't tell them anything, they will send 10% to the IRS in taxes. But you can tell them don't send anything. But you can't do that in a 401k, except, Chris, on RMDs. Your RMDs can be exempt to the 20% withholding. But anything beyond that would be subject to the 20% withholdings. So those are just some of the reasons that you would want to think of beyond the six main ones. But how do you evaluate? If you sit there and you say, okay, these six appeal to me, I'm going to move. But what other elements? So it's your investment options, fees, creditors protection, NUA or Roth conversions, estate planning. You could even put the stretch in there, even though I think the stretch IRA is going the way of the dodo bird, because 401ks are probably not going to allow non-spouse beneficiaries, if they even allow them to keep it open, to stretch. It's not a big problem, Chris, because you can move the 401k at death to an inherited IRA. But here's a reason to leave money in the 401k. Let's say you, as the retiree, Chris, are in a tax bracket higher than your beneficiary who's going to be your child. Your child may be a college student or someone new, not earning much. And you would love to leave that kid a Roth. But you're thinking, gosh, if I convert it, I'm in the 35 or 37% tax bracket. Plus, let's say you're from New York, so you've got city income tax and state income tax and federal income tax. And you're thinking, oh, geez, this is nuts. I want to leave my kids a Roth because in the future, they're going to be in a very high bracket. Maybe your kid right now is in med school or law school and they're not successful yet. So you're thinking, I'd love to leave them a Roth because in the future they're going to be wicked successful. And I want that money to be tax-free. A inherited IRA cannot be converted to a Roth IRA. And maybe the parent, sadly, has a low short life expectancy. And they're thinking, I'd love to be able to convert this for my kid.
And give them the ability to convert it immediately when they get it.
But they couldn't if they leave them an IRA.
Right.
Inherited 401ks can be converted by your non-spouse beneficiary. Spouse beneficiary doesn't have a problem. We're talking non-spouse beneficiaries. So there could be a reason to leave the money.
Mm-hmm.
Start doing some forward thinking. God forbid anyone is in that situation. But you can see, and I could probably come up with a dozen different scenarios where giving your child the ability to convert to a Roth at their lower tax brackets, still going to be subject to required minimum distributions. But maybe they're in a position where the year of death, they're in such a low bracket and it's not going to stay there. Converting makes sense. Or converting a lot, maybe not all. It's not an all or nothing. You don't have to convert it all. It gives them that flexibility in the year of death to convert. I don't think they're going to have more flexibility beyond the year of death because most employers are going to force that 401k to be closed by December 31st of the year following death because it's a non-spouse beneficiary. but it gives them one, technically 2 years, the year of death and the year following, to do some converting at maybe a lower bracket. You can't if you leave them in IRA. Just one of those things.
Mm-hmm. That's one that's, I'm glad you brought that one up because that's not a common one to think about.
No. And that's why there's a lot of, a good advisor, a good planner could come up with more reasons than I can invest your money better. And I don't want you to get swayed by any of these reasons and ignore the fees your advisor is costing you. That's why we began with fees. But anyways, folks, we listed the six things you can do, and we listed a lot of elements that need to be evaluated before deciding what are you going to do with your 401k. Hope you found this show interesting. Chris and I found it interesting to give a couple of little nuances, a lot of nuances built into this. If you listen to this a few times, you'll be saying, wow, I didn't know that. Wow, I didn't know that. But anyways, Chris, why don't you wrap up this version of the show?
Well, I want to remind everybody that if you have particular questions about anything we talk about on these shows, we have the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition where you can send in your questions. And if it's going to take a lengthy, in-depth answer, maybe we'll make it another EDU show. But generally, the questions that come in from all you listeners are going to be handled on the Q&A show. The way you send us a question or a comment is to go to the website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, there's a contact form. You can use that. You can also email Jim directly, jim@jimhelps.com. He's got his pile of papers. Believe it or not, he prints those emails out, and that's very nice.
Thick, isn't it?
It's quite thick, actually. If it's pertaining to a show that we just had, it might actually trickle to the top. If you happen to be from Kentucky, do we still have that rule?
If you're a Kentuckian.
Yeah, it gets raised to the top because only if, I want to put one little restriction on that.
You actually can't just say live in Kentucky.
You can't just say you're from Kentucky. You have to say you're from Kentucky and provide an opinion to Jim as to why or why not he might want to consider retiring there. That's the whole point.
We had the Indiana guy who said it just sucks.
Right. Well, yeah.
He didn't elaborate.
No. And I don't know if he's ever been there, actually.
He lives in Indiana. That's
well,
right
I know,
Kentucky.
But maybe he just... Doesn't really.
I would hope if he's going to broad brushly paint the whole state of Kentucky as sucking, he's at least been there.
One would think, but people, maybe he was just born with those feelings.
But yes, for those who don't know, and it's not a joke and it's not meant to be banter, I'm trying to share with people the thought process I'm putting in for my retirement. Granted, it's still 10 to 15 years away, but I am looking at retirement through the eyes of a 70 and 80 year old. And I don't know if Colorado's going to give me what I want. Don't know if Kentucky's going to. I've never been there. But it does have gardening. And I think as a 70 and 80-year-old, I can garden a hell of a lot better in Kentucky. But anyways, we're going to talk more about this on future shows of things to look at. But that's why we jokingly talk about Kentucky a lot. And we're getting listeners' opinions. I'm trying to elicit. Is it elicit or solicit? Opinions.
Solicit.
Am I soliciting or eliciting? Yeah. What does it matter? I stumped you.
Illicit means naughty. So
that's illicit, but I think you can elicit an opinion, can't you? Or is that solicit only?
You know, it's late in the afternoon and my brain is not...
but anyways, that's why Chris mentioned that. And the few listeners who said they were from Kentucky... Now, I will throw someone under the bus. He listed he was from Kentucky. We answered his question. We jumped him to the top of the line. But I noticed, and his email was at a certain business. It was a hospital.
Oh, that doesn't exist in Kentucky?
Laura Googled it. It's from Washington State.
Oh, no. Someone's working the system?
He worked the system. Okay. Said he was from Kentucky. Now, it's very possible that he lives in Kentucky but works remotely for a hospital in Washington State.
Yeah, maybe.
But if that listener is out there, we busted you. But I still answered his question before Laura figured it out. So she said, give me all the emails from Kentuckians. I'll figure out if they're in Kentucky. Like, how are you going to do that? She goes, we'll ask them trivia questions. Oh, so you're going to reach out to them with Kentucky trivia. I said, now we're getting a little ridiculous.
A little bit, yeah. Well, but on the other hand, if you'd like some information on what services we provide in the area of retirement planning in particular, that is our niche, we are practicing financial planners here in Northern Colorado, and we help clients throughout this country. And we're more than happy to have a little chat with you. We call it a coffee and a second opinion. It is free to have that initial conversation meeting. We can do that over the phone or face-to-face if you happen to be local. And we can talk about what your questions, concerns might be for your retirement. We'll talk about the types of services we offer. And if they happen to coincide, if we can help you out, we can talk more specifically moving forward. If you're looking for something we don't actually provide, we'll do our best to get you to the resources that can help you out. In order to schedule that coffee and a second opinion, you can do one of two things. You can go to the website, jimhelps.com, and click on the calendar app that's on there. You can just schedule directly. It'll provide you with some choices for dates, and you can just schedule it right on there. You can also just reach out to us in a more conventional manner. Give us a phone call at 970-530-0556. And speak to our administrative folks, and they'd be more than happy to schedule a time for us to chat. So we really appreciate everybody listening here. I'll check out our Q&A show if you haven't picked that up yet, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.